they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole.
Get we found. Ready. It's time again to venture down the rabbit hole into the world of cybersecurity. You're plugged into the podcast for security leaders and practitioners with a business sense. Prepare for unique interviews, insights, and practical advice that makes your job just a bit easier. And now, please welcome your guides on this adventure, James Jardine and the White Rabbit, Ruffalos.
All right, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome down the security rabbit hole to yet another edition of the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. This is Ralph, flying solo because Captain James is off doing James things. You know, life gets in the way sometimes of podcasting. How dare he? But anyway, we are streaming this live to YouTube because I'm trying some new things, and maybe some of you guys prefer that anyway. So give that a shot. You can obviously catch it later there, but, my guest today is obviously no stranger to the podcast. If you guys don't know him by now, it's time to get Wi-Fi in your cave. Mr. Jim Tiller, welcome to the program, sir.
How's it going, Raph? It's always a pleasure, man. Thanks so much for having me on again. I feel like this is becoming this great little habit. I love it. The famous, the you know, infamous,
the so as I introduced, I was on the cloud security podcast with Anton yesterday, and I said that infamous, that means more than famous, and neither Tim nor Anton got it, which is kind of concerning.
Yeah,
but it's the Three Amigos reference. Come on, you guys, wake up!
Absolutely, it's awesome. Absolutely.
I don't think I'm infamous. I hope I'm not infamous. I'm definitely not famous.
You're 100% famous, man. Right? You're a rock star, no doubt.
Get out of here. All right. Well, then in that case, that's all your fault because I gathered most of this while working for you. So
I don't know about that, man. We had a good time, though, didn't we?
We had some fun. Listen, we got to do some of these things. I wanted to talk about you guys listening. Listen, we had a I don't know where Jim saw. I think you posted something, and then I replied to it and said we should do a podcast and. And so here we are. The topic is virtual CISOs. It's going to be interesting because we are in a position in the world where there's a large segment of the population that from a corporate perspective that can neither afford a top tier CISO nor has any idea how to get one or keep one. So they go with what makes economic sense, right? Was that fractional CISO, somebody that can come in, advise, but not be on the payroll every day. But you know, I kind of wonder, does that make sense? So Jim, of all the things that you and I have done together, this is probably the one that is the most directly associated with our time together, right? This virtual CISO idea, consulting CISO. And of course, I took that on to the next job when I went. So, but talk to me a little bit about where your head's at. We'll start there. Like when somebody says virtual CISO, what goes on in Jim's head? That because obviously you've done this for a couple of years in the consulting space. So, talk to me.
I think in simple terms, I mean, obviously you gave it a perfectly good definition, but just to elaborate on that is, I think about organizations that struggle with security from a top-down perspective. They struggle with the executive team, the board level, which we see a lot of type of articles. One just came out, yesterday about, let me see here, the title is Corporate Boards Struggle to Understand Cybersecurity and Digital Transformation based on an analysis that was done. But I would add to that is what I like to call like the COO component of a CISO. In other words, having been a COO in the past, you're really, as a COO, kind of like, bear with me here, and I don't mean to be mean to anybody out there, but it's almost like you're the project program manager for the CEO's vision. You're trying to make sure that what the CEO, the board are looking to accomplish as a business, it's your job to connect those dots as a COO and make those become a reality, okay? I think of a CISO being connecting what is necessary to achieve a sound security environment with the needs of the business. But I think sometimes it's hard to do all those pieces at the same time, because as a CISO, you have to really have a deep understanding of technology, understand where things are going, understand the threat environment, and so forth. So sometimes it's helpful when somebody comes in this part-time role and kind of says working at that, lack of a better term, board level or executive level. That's how it started for me. That's how I started thinking about vCISO. I think it has expanded from there to be not just that top level piece. Matter of fact, I'll go one step further. The program oversight part of it, I think, has become more attractive. Whereas I need somebody to work with the CIO and their team, because we're implementing all these various digital transformation projects. We're moving to the cloud or moving away from the cloud, depending on where you're at that cycle. I need to address where security fits into all these different initiatives, these different programs, and somebody to stitch it together for me and then help me effectively communicate that strategically in that strategy outwardly and upwardly, in some cases down through that process. So I think it's evolving, but I just gave you a really long-winded answer for that. But fundamentally, it's having access to somebody who has all the bruises and scars, I like to say, that understands what the business is trying to accomplish, be able to translate that into a meaningful security strategy, and then importantly, help take action on that strategy as it relates to other parts of the business.
So, well said. I'm with you there. I think where we all started, right, when vCISO first became a thing, it was, I think, with the intent of, I don't have the staff for this. I don't know who to hire. I'm going to go to a consulting company that has expertise that can bring me somebody for a bit. Now, I always questioned how strategic, because the role of a CISO is to be strategic and aligned to company mission, organizational mission. How aligned can you be if you're just there, you know, consulting, right? A couple hours a day, a couple hours a week, a couple hours a month. Can you really understand the company? If you're asking the right questions and you have a lot of expertise, you bring some of that with you, and then you know who to go to in that. But I think that's this idea that a broadly trained consultant can be a good virtual, at least part-time leader, security leader in your organization, I think is problematic for me, because you have to get down in the specifics. You have to, like, okay, which field are you in? Are you in healthcare? Are you in financial services? Are you in retail? Are you industrial? Like, what size company are you? Like, what are your struggles? Right, what is your executive team like? How you treat risk in the organization? Like, those types of things. As a consultant, unfortunately, I've too often seen people show up and be like, all right, here's what you got to do. Here's what my strategy I recommend. Here's what you should have. Here's 27 pages that I've used 1,000 other times. Off you go. And believe me, I used to deliver virtual security services like that, you know. And I've been to companies and they've said, wow, your recommendations are you know, 30 slides. The report I got from this big four company on strategy is 380 pages, right? I remember that one stuck in my head because my friend Eric told me that, or some huge number. And I was like, oh, well, wait a minute, 300, how many? Like, how do you execute on it? He goes, exactly, right? Because where do you even begin to go? So I think it becomes problematic when you try to get anywhere beyond like a generic virtual CISO that it does not have spatial expertise or market expertise in the area that you're in the market segment. It gets problematic when you try to go the layer beyond like basic security do's and don'ts. What do you think?
Okay. So let's bring up some critical differentiating factors about vCISO, which you can agree or disagree on. And I'm speaking to everybody who's listening, right? First of all is, vCISO is not necessarily very attractive to organizations that are quite large or already have a fairly sophisticated security program or already have a CISO in place. Okay.
Fair.
So we have to understand the fact that I think vCISO is becoming more popular because more and more companies of varying walks of life are having to deal with cybersecurity in ways they've never even envisioned. Call it ransomware or cloud or pick your poison, Web 3.0, whatever it is. Companies that used to make, you know, furniture are now having major digital needs and transformation to move their business forward, even though they still are just making sawdust, right? All right. So there's, when you take that into consideration, it's difficult to find, attract, afford, retain, utilize a full-blown CISO, really, for a company that size. Now, let's get into the timing piece of it. Well, I could argue from a staying in loop of strategy is, you know, boards might meet once a quarter or executive teams might have once a month meetings, right? Now, you and I both know real meetings happen between the meetings, right? But
all day.
It's an opportunity to be able to have ask questions, voice certain perspectives, gain an understanding of risk appetite and perception of what is cybersecurity relative to their business, echo that and say, okay, I don't need a detailed map to take that hill. You understand? I need you to pull out a map and circle a coordinate and go, Jim, go take that hill, right? So what I'm asking for from the board or executive leadership is give me primary directional components. Give me those indicators of where you want this thing to go. My job is then to help translate that into more, I don't want to keep using the word strategy and strategic and synergy and, you know, insert whatever consulting phrase here, but be able to interpret those into initiatives, projects, components, areas of focus for the security team that they can continue to drive. And then I can come back later and say, hey, how well did team A, how well did you make it on exploring passwordless opportunities? What are the, you know, top three barriers that you've run into? Team B, how's this? They don't need to know the strategy is to make for zero trust, just to throw out something that's hot all over the press. Now, the third thing I'll add to that is the concept of persistence. And that is, we have three major consumption models. We have, you hire somebody and they're full-time, which is the obvious one, okay? Second, and those come with all kinds of pros and cons. Second is you have outsourcing, which is like managed security services. The advantage there is somebody else is doing all the work, you transfer that risk, and they just go on. The downside is you have to fit within their portfolio of offerings of what you want, kind of thing.
Right.
Then you have outtasking, which is consulting, which is project-oriented. I need something done, bring in a consultant, they do an assessment, tell me what I need to do, lay some things out for me in a plan, and then they disappear, and then my FTEs kind of carry on. Why the VCSO piece works is because you can get into this rhythmic state. So you're optimizing that resource utilization. It has a component of consulting, but it has that persistence that you get with a full-time employee without necessarily all the things that become more challenging. And then you're not locked into a given portfolio. So how do you know as a VC? So how can you kind of maintain that strategy? Is part of it is that you're just staying interconnected. So I think one of the value attributes that get it lost a little bit is if you're going to VCSO with as your company looking to VCSO, really say, let's engage with you and how does your thinking, your approach to cyber fit generally what we're trying to accomplish for the long term? And so it's not necessarily a short-term decision or short-term engagement. It is a series of short engagements that are designed to create that persistence. I know that's a very long-winded comment, but
no. I totally get that. So that resonates. That brings me to a different, to a kind of a sideways point, Jim. So your company A, right? Clearly a mid-market, lower enterprise kind of company. You don't want to buy, and by buy, I mean hire, a security team, including the leader. Because for whatever reasons, right? Odds are you have no idea what you're doing. So you don't really know who to hire. So you're out tasking the CISO role, you're outsourcing potentially security to a managed provider. Who owns the risk at the end of the day? I think it's still the same, still you, right?
Well, owning I always love the risk ownership conversation. At the end of the day, it's the executive team ultimately and the board. I mean, the board is very good at, gosh, I'm going to get on a huge tangent about board and cybersecurity and all this kind of stuff. But
all right.
But as a virtual CISO, I would say, in the most traditional sense, is anything that is the role of a CISO that you would normally assign to that individual in a leadership scenario with regards to responsibilities, you would have to accept the fact that that's going to happen in a virtual CISO scenario as well. If you really boil it down, is a virtual CISO is a more economical and sustainable approach to having security leadership than just hiring somebody in some cases, not in every case, not by a long shot. So the your question is like really, really good, which makes it very, very difficult to answer very, very well. So it's, you're not signing on as an officer of the company. So there are some barriers there. So if you sign on as officer of a company, that changes the dynamics altogether. But you know, like when you have, what is it? Non-manager or non-directorial board members, or I'm trying to think of the exact term. It eludes me at the moment, but same sort of concept is you're an advisor into the leadership community. And through that, that leadership community has to have faith in your ability to understand that you have certain skin in the game and that you're going to be held accountable in some ways. Now that the reach of that accountability is what's in question, because you're dealing with essentially a contracted model, if you will. Tricky one.
So, I mean, we agree. It's a good idea when the alternative is either we're not sure or nothing. I'd say that it gets less of a good idea the further you go into larger company or more mature IT, right? That, because that becomes problematic for a number of reasons, including like, hey, you've got a relatively mature IT organization. What's up with not hiring a security person? I'm curious, because having gotten past the, like, I still stumble, and I'm just going to keep stumbling on, like, I like the idea. I've done a similar or an adjacent role, and even that role for a while. But what I was all my, the thing that was always in the back of my head that always, I don't know, the sword of Damocles, if you will, that was always over my head was, do I know this company enough from the time they've let me spend here with the information they've given me as an outsider to really advise them well? Because you can advise somebody well in a generic sense. Mm-hmm. I expect that enough experience in the industry abroad will give you an excellent, like, you could probably, Jim, walk into just about any company, big or small, and go, I could probably tell you five things that you should be doing and maybe and five things you shouldn't be doing based on what I see, like, in that immediate moment. It gets deeper when, like, you know, personalities and politics and budgets and all this stuff start to get intertwined. And so anything above like that high layer of security strategy, like, somebody says, well, okay, I see why this, because 98% of the industry does this, but how does that apply to us? And I always have to go, and I would always think, crap, do I have a good enough answer for that? Mm-hmm. Is it, do I have enough information? Now, that was my big fear, is do I have, am I intertwined in this organization enough to give them advice that's frankly valuable to them because they're them, as opposed to them because they're part of the industry at large? And then the very next thought was, well, crap, I'm going to deliver this and be gone. How the hell do they execute on this?
Okay. Again, two huge questions. All right. First of all,
sorry, I'm bad at small questions today.
Yeah, you're done. Dumb with it. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, you can learn a company in 2 days. Don't worry about that. You're overthinking it. Totally impossible. A lot of VCSO projects, a lot of VCSO engagements will start off with, they'll do the proverbial assessment and kind of do that. I tend to lean toward, you know, that's what people expect you to talk about, and that's perfectly fine. But for me, what I'm doing is I'm trying to get to know everybody, know the inner workings, because not companies are not really, from a cyber perspective, like you said, they're not hugely different in a lot of cases. They have different technology and different approaches. But what I'm trying to do is really get into the culture of the organization as quickly as humanly possible. And so I'm very much focused on asking questions that lead me to intent. interpretations. I want to understand the culture, who's who in the zoo as quickly as possible, knowing full well that I can advise you. But in the beginning, I think a lot of VCSOs feel the same way. And it's kind of like, okay, based on what I know now, here's what I would say, right? That kind of thing. I see that a lot. I think in my past, what I've done is I've just spent an exorbitant amount of time with the client in this particular case, even though it wasn't being quote unquote billed for it, because for me to do a job that I can sleep at night and feel comfortable with, to your point earlier, there's certain things you have to know. And a lot of things in the very beginning is I'll tell people is like, I need total access. I need not access to systems, access to people. I need to be able to pick up the phone and call the CEO. I need to be able to call this board member. I need to call the head of IT. I need to call the help desk guy to understand what they're dealing with, you know? And so I think there's a lot of load on the VCSO to do a lot of heavy lifting to quickly as close that gap as quickly as possible. And I think some of the bad experiences some organizations have with VCSO and sometimes security consulting is in general is because they feel like they're just getting, you know, a rebranded 300 page deliverable. We've all done it. Hands up. I will absolutely, you know, I prided myself on the ability to take information and reuse it because frankly, the problems were the same, but I've gone completely. There's nothing wrong with it, but I think at the quote unquote VCSO level, and I don't want to imply some sort of giant thing here, but I've gone completely the opposite direction. I produce very targeted materials, and they're very oriented to that piece of it. Now, the point you mentioned earlier is how do I even know if anything's getting done? Is I go back to the comment I made about almost being like a program manager. Is your role as a VC, so I see it in some ways, is your ability to kind of make sure things are progressing. So you set milestones, you set activities, you set goals for people relative to that project. So when you come back, maybe the project is, your engagement is 3 days a week or 5 days a month. You don't know, but you have to be able to work with your organization as a VCSO, or an organization has to work with their VCSO to say, okay, what kind of rhythm makes the best sense? And by the way, be prepared to throttle that rhythm, right? Sometimes you need more or less, but if there's a lot that needs to get done, you have to plan accordingly and say, here's exactly how I want to see what is being done. I think far too often we get into show me a report. I want to see our threat report. I want to see our vulnerability report. I want to see this report or our risk register. And I think from a VCSO perspective, I'm more interested in the mechanisms to get the report done. And I think if you focus on the actions that are underlying it, you won't just get a report that just says something that you really want to see or not want to see for that matter. You're working in the intent of what you're trying to accomplish. What are the core things that need to get done and measure? Because inspect what you expect, but expect what you measure, right? So if I'm putting in place not a list of tasks like a project plan, but I really want to emphasize the concept of a program. I don't want to get into agile and all this kind of stuff because that's not what I'm talking about. Is yes, I want to see this risk report. Yes, I want to see this, but I want to be assured that these particular key processes were taking place that give that outcome meaning. And if you focus on those underlying pieces without drawing too far into the depths of it and allowing people to do what they're really good at, you'll be able to get there. You're able to maintain a decent continuity of activity.
So I like where you went there. That idea of project managing, right? The program managing, is pretty strong, because I think that takes this VCSO idea and splits it into part guidance counselor, right? Part hallway monitor, if you will, right?
It's amazing how you do that.
I'm going to sit down. Exactly what it is. Right. Tell me all your problems, and I'm going to tell you how to effectively not feel so bad about yourself. But also, it's my job to tell you when you're acting stupid. You need to stop. Now some companies wouldn't want to listen to that, whether you're a consultant or on staff. Mm-hmm. So let's throw that away, because that's an edge case and we can't fix that. From the program management perspective, when you, I'm thinking of companies that have like the outtask and outsource. So you outtask the CISO job, maybe the virtual CISO and like some other thing, right? But the layer below that is where rubber meets road. Your policy and your recommendations become actual tasks and projects and deliverables and such. So when you're working as a consultant, and then they've got odds are they've got a third party doing their outsourcing, like their security outsourcing, and it's not the same. It's not going to be the same group, because more and more it's not the same group, and so. You're up here making policy and recommendations. They're over there doing their thing, two separate companies, and the third company is the client. How do you do this? How do you pass through and manage effectively a series of ongoing program related tasks and projects when the people don't work for you and you don't actually you're not actually employed directly in the organization? So you lack a little bit of that power. You got to enable somebody else in that organization, odds are, to know what to say, who to ask, what things to ask for. Is that a concern?
It's interesting, because you kind of answered a little bit there. Is one is recognizing that if you're working on behalf of the customer, you have, one could argue, the power of the customer with that given relationship. Okay. The first step in order is this is a huge one, and I see it all the time. You see it all the time. All us guys that have been in this rodeo for a while, we see it all the time, is you make a policy that's just, one, unenforceable or unobtainable or both, right? So I find most often than not is I go to the third party and I go, okay, this policy says this. Walk me through how we're getting that done. Or I'll tell somebody in the team, hey, next time you're doing this, do a very quick gap analysis against these three policies. Real quick, conversational, help us understand, are these even implemented or possible? This is not an audit. I don't care if it's working or not. Just tell me if it's possible, what's working, what's not, where are the workarounds, what are you doing? So if you make security more human and recognize that, and you're not just a policy hammer running around looking for policy nails, you'll get really far really, really fast, and just go to the people who know. So I said something earlier, I want to make sure I reemphasize, is that organizations have smart people in there. I think in most cases we're channeling their energy to the point where we're just kind of snuffing out that innovative or that ability to do things, you know, way that they want to. So they're also an enormous source of information, and they can tell you, I don't think it's going to work for this reason. You want to harness that. So yes, what you're saying is a challenge getting through, especially when you're dealing with, you know, multi-layered cloud environments across all kinds of regions with all different kinds of people empowered to do different things. And so you do spend a lot of time negotiating, lack of a better term. And that is a time hog, to say the least. But it's almost like you want to create a rhythm and I won't say a script, but give people the power to do something that they already fundamentally know how to do, or just say, look, this is what we're really trying to accomplish. I find more often than not is, if you're just saying, look, I'm not here to audit you, people get a little spooked when a CISO comes rolling around. And I think is you're just trying to understand the lay of the land to better understand what's reasonable. And if there is a gap, then you explore the policy, you explore the service, or you go back and say, look, we've got a policy that we want, but it's not implementable. It's not maintainable. It's not measurable. We need to have a broader conversation about this. And let's not worry about what that technology solution is at the moment and figure out, are we need to change trajectory or re-understand what our risks are. One more quick thing I just want to add is I think there were times when we would take really great consultants, like especially when we were back in like the HP days or INS days and things like that, and put them in a project management ability, because as a consultant, they really understand how to mobilize resources and kind of achieve a very complex objective. And so they understood security, but were able to manage the environment, manage the people, even at the task level, all the way through to that programmatic level. And I think a VCISO is somebody who has strong sort of managerial capabilities, but is able to interpret those through the lens of security in a very business-minded way. I know that sounds like the triangle of death kind of thing, but I don't want to overemphasize the importance of that programmatic capability there. It's working with other people and setting in line processes that people can execute on for you.
That's actually really interesting. I want to flip this around as we start to think about closing out this conversation, because mm-hmm. let's look at it from the customer's eyes. As a customer, you're looking at, all right, I'm thinking about bringing in a virtual CISO. What are the things that I'm looking for when I talk to somebody, that this is the right person, this is the right consultant, they have the right experience, they really get me, right? They're going to be effective here. What's your interview questions, or like, what are the points you think they should hit, Jim?
So if I may say, is I actually wrote an article recently about this exact thing, and that is, the executive team has to see you as part of the team, right? Otherwise, you're going to get absolutely nowhere. So there's a huge cultural element to this. So I wouldn't be asking questions like, oh, how long have you been in security? How well do you know this technology? I would not, that is not your job at a senior level to be looking at somebody come in as a virtual CISO. Let your team handle that and verify or validate their understanding of policies or regulations that are affecting your business. I would really focus on, what is your approach? How do you perceive risk? What do you think is most important to a business like our business? Have you done work in the healthcare space before? We're a very small organization. Are you expecting to have large budgets, or, you know, really kind of get into what it is meaning about adding somebody, albeit a virtual CISO in a part-time fractional role? They're going to become part of your leadership team. Maybe not an in-depth, you know, well-rooted person, right? Let's be honest, but somebody that team's got to be able to count on. So you're really going to be looking for attitude, how they deal with diversity, deal with challenges, how they deal with, you know, getting to know people. You know, you're not there to ask about security questions that, you know what I mean? That can be later on. And you're really going to be looking at how well they're going to fit with the leadership community. That's the big one.
That's okay. I appreciate you saying that, because I think a lot of times our brain immediately goes to, all right, do they know the three risk frameworks that we were advised to use? And do they have expertise in retail card systems? And do they know the processing standard? And can they name all three of the technologies that we use? And it's like, yeah, but that is important. I'm not going to discount that, but you know, can they be effective inside this organization with this organization's leadership team? It's probably substantially more important than anything else you can ask. That's a good way to say it. All right. What else we cover?
Well, I think the big one is I would encourage medium to small companies, ones that are dealing with whether they're moving to the cloud, what they're going to be doing something, or maybe they're doing nothing at all. And maybe they think that they're not at risk, or whatever the case may be. There's no harm in at least bringing somebody in to touch base on an executive level, even at a board level, and say, hey, you've taken a look at our environment. What are things we should be thinking? Or even just have somebody there to give you what's happening in today's threats, even, you know, kind of consolidate it down, but structure in a way that means something to your business. One of the things I was talking to a customer about recently is, even mentoring. There are organizations that have a really large IT organization, but are just starting to embrace the cyber side of things. And they have a real killer person in IT that's interested in security. They're just not ready to take on what it means to be a full-on CISO. But the leadership team wants that individual to be the CISO. They really do. So, okay, well, why don't we come in and we just hook together at the hip and start talking. What is strategy? What's the policy? What's the risk? How do we organize these things? How do we deal with it? And so you're getting almost training, consulting, and getting the program set up from somebody who's done it for 30 years or 20 years or whatever. And this person is able to get a positive launching platform into their next step of their career for that company.
You know, I appreciate you going that direction, because I would have missed it. The mentorship is a huge, huge part here. We're not gonna make more of us to fill the gaps that exist by hogging and hoarding information and knowledge, right? So, and you can't, this kind of stuff, I mean, you can't learn by reading through books and going through college curriculum. Yeah. You're just not going to, it's just not the way it works. Right? You learn this the hard way, right? Getting scars, long hours, missing, you know, important events in your life and being locked in a basement, writing policy documents or on an airplane somewhere. Which consequently makes these people that are willing to do that job extremely valuable. And I've got some friends that do that. My buddy Rock does that. Like that's a fantastic, that's a fantastic thing to get engaged in. Cause I gotta tell you, you know, more and more conversations, with friends in this industry are revolving around the fact that as vendors, like the more and more the vendor community is really just selling to the top, you know, top 250 Fortune 500. After that, you're kind of like get with it or you're on your own. And really, yes, a lot of risk lies in the big companies, but also their suppliers and providers and whatever and partners. That's where a lot of the breaches come from. And if you leave them, you know, the 50 person company that does whatever payroll processing or item fulfillment or something, some such, you're like, yeah, they're too small to matter. Trust me, they matter. They absolutely matter. Ask the folks that helped that one red Target company, you know, back in the HVAC broken in 2 days. I mean, look, we're all interconnected. There's no longer a way to say, oh, that thing doesn't affect me, right? That's somebody else's technology. It doesn't matter. So anyway, that's a long way of saying this is a good conversation to have. I hope folks got something out of this. I think we're going to leave it there at the 30 some odd minute mark. Jim, as always, the expertise is highly valued, and I know you've probably got tons of it stored up in your head. So I'll be probably calling up on you again to dispense some more as we go.
I really appreciate it, Raph. It's always a pleasure. It's an interesting topic, that's for sure. Next time we'll talk about pizza, football, or hot rods or something.
shooting long range rifles. Exactly. I gotta get back up, man. I gotta come back up and do more of that. That was fun. I've never had to chase a cow off a range before, so that was that's a memory that's stuck in my mind. That was fantastic.
Just shoot over them.
Yeah, just don't hit them. They're expensive. Yeah, exactly. All right, folks, thank you for listening. This has been another great episode talking about the virtual CISO. And hopefully, if this is a career path for you, it's a great place to invest some time. But as I think we've identified, this is not a book learning kind of activity. So you're going to have to do some seat time. If you're looking at somebody to fill this role virtually, Jim gave you some good ideas on what to ask and how to measure this, the kind of person you want to bring in. So it's a wild world out there still. Nothing is resolved in this industry. And so that I hope this brings you some great time. So Jim, once again, thanks for being on the show, buddy.
Thanks, bud.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. This has been another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Check us out on our LinkedIn page, where I hope more of you will start to get more engaged. I'm posting more and more content on there. Check us out on our YouTube channel if you prefer to watch videos on YouTube rather than listen. And of course, the RSS feed has been in the same place for 13 years now and rolling, man. I have no intention of stopping. So till next time, folks. All right. Take it easy. Ciao.
As we fade out on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole episode, we'd like to encourage you to chat with our hosts and guests using the Twitter hashtag #DTSR. Please check out the show notes, catch up on any episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. So on behalf of Rafal, James, for now it's goodbye. We'll see you soon on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast.